If you haven't already, turn in your Old Testaments to the book of Habakkuk. Thank you, Brandon, for reading from Habakkuk, the first chapter. And that's where we'll be taking our lesson from this morning. The song this morning, I didn't ask for any songs to be led, and that was a particularly interesting song to be led before our lesson this morning by Jacob. Thank you very much. It's kind of a juxtaposition to what we're going to talk about and the things that Habakkuk thinks are going on, and how I think in Habakkuk's soul it is not well in Judah. And it is interesting because we're going to talk about a number of quandaries here in these short few verses that we read this morning, and I think hopefully make some applications to us today. But unlike the song which says, "It is well with my soul," I think Habakkuk, it is not well with his soul, and some of the answers that God's going to give him certainly don't rest easy with him. We appreciate you being here this morning to study God's Word with us. We're going to take just a few moments to delve into it, and then we're going to be at the conclusion of our worship service shortly. But before we do that, I want to take just a few moments and look at the first chapter, a portion of it, in Habakkuk. And Habakkuk is interesting because he just kind of delves right into what he wants to talk about. He goes there without giving you any kind of greetings, without any salutations. He doesn't talk about where he's from. He doesn't talk about his family. He doesn't talk about his wife or his, you know, his three kids, his two sons, his one daughter. He doesn't tell you anything. He just hits it right there. There's not even enough there when you think about it, when you read here at the beginning of Habakkuk, to make any kind of, if it was necessary, some kind of obituary for him. Because what could you say about Habakkuk? But he gets right to the point. And as I said, there are things that are weighing on the soul of Habakkuk. Now, Habakkuk is a bit of a different prophet because many of the prophets are talking to the people on behalf of God. But Habakkuk's a little bit different. He's going to talk to God about the people. And Habakkuk is very perplexed about what he sees in the society that he lives in. And it's kind of the main point of the lesson this morning. And that is this, that true faith often finds itself perplexed at God and sometimes finds God's answers lead to even more problems for faith. As I said, this kind of is a juxtaposition to the song that we just sang about being well with our soul. But sometimes the answers that we get perplex us. Why is God letting this happen? And I think all of us can say, honestly today, that that may be how we feel from day to day. Maybe not all the time. But you can't help but look at the world and go, why does God let the things that go on happen? And when is God going to take judgment upon people that are so wicked and so evil? And that's what Habakkuk is thinking here. And it raises a number of quandaries, and we're just going to look at a few this morning. And the first one that I want to look at is the silence of God in human violence. The silence of God in human violence. And I think I may have just turned this off. In verses 2 through 4, Habakkuk delves right in to the issue. And he says, "O Lord, how long shall I cry for help, and you will not hear, or cry to you violence, and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity, and why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and continue arise." Habakkuk here is concerned about the lack of justice, the amount of violence that's being committed in Judah. This isn't some other country. This isn't somebody else doing it. It's the people of Judah. It's the elites of Judah that are oppressing the people, and his soul is vexed by it. Now, this is all happening in the latter part of the 7th century B.C., sometime, 630-ish, 625, somewhere in there, 620. So, it's happening in a time when it's nearing the end of the kingdom of Judah. And he sees this violence among his own people. And you think about it, these are supposedly the professing covenant people of God, and yet here they are acting as bad as all the nations that surround them. It's dangerous to live there. Little people get squashed by the elites. Injustice and violence prevails. And Habakkuk is raising these concerns to God. And we see him puzzling over this situation. He puzzles over the delay. You listen here to him in verse 2, "How long shall I cry?" And he also asks the question, why? Why will you not do anything, God? Why do you make me see iniquity? Why do you idly look at wrong? Why? These are your people, God, and you allow this to happen. And you may say to yourself, kind of sounds like today, doesn't it somewhat? Maybe not the specifics, not a direct bright line that takes you from the things that Habakkuk is talking about to today, but he's talking about things that you can broadly think about in our society. You can't help but pay attention to the news and the world events, the events in this country, and not go, how can God let this evil continue? How can people see immorality as good and good as evil? It is a complete decaying of morality around us. And we see the judicial system, like Habakkuk talks about, perverting itself, taking the side against the immoral people against the Christians of today. And the government advocating immoral ways of life. And it sounds a lot like, if you go and read it, the last part of Romans, the first chapter. Doesn't it? If you're honest with yourself, it sounds a lot like what Paul talks about, that God gave them over to these things in their life. And it's happening here today. And Habakkuk saying it's happening in my time as well. But if we're honest with ourselves for just a moment, God has said the world will always look like this because the world doesn't believe in him as a whole, because it's Satan's world. Satan corrupts it. And just sometimes it's a little less in your face. It's a little less out in the open. But now, it's back to being normal. Sounds a lot like verse 4, when he says, "So the law is paralyzed, and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surrounds the righteous, so justice goes forth perverted." Is that not us today? That's the thing that Habakkuk, in this country, in this kingdom that is God's people, is saying about them. Remember, these are the covenant people of God, churchgoers, if you will. And they look for ways to put the hurt on the common people. You want an idea about what I'm talking about here? Maybe go look over in Micah, the second chapter, and in the third chapter sometimes. See there the things that were going on. You can't help but read that and realize the depravity that was going on and the things that were being done. And these things were being done so they would hurt the common people. And you ask yourself, well, what do you mean by that? Well, it could have been like was talked about in those two passages that I mentioned. Foreclosures on loans. Some of the bankers of the day, the loan sharks of the day, might push one of the godly believers who can't pay until they take his land and his inheritance, the inheritance that's promised to them by God. And they took it, and they devoured it. Even Jesus talks about some of these people, how they devour those things in his time as well. course, yeah, like anything the elite have, they have all the permits they need. They have all the sanctions they need. It's all legal, but it's not according to Scripture. And sometimes it could be straight-up violence, and sometimes it could be subtle violence. But whatever it was against the true believers, and it perverted justice against the faithful, believing remnant among the people of Judah. And they were the ones catching the brunt of the violence that Habakkuk here is deploring. Violence. And in a way, isn't that our concern as well? Aren't we concerned about the way this country goes? Maybe we're not concerned about outright violence right now, but aren't we concerned about the way that our government is heading and the way that people in this country, as far as morality, are heading and the way that society as a whole is headed and what they will think about us? We talk about how we're going to be considered to be hate speech because of the things that we preach, that God says are sin. And it seems that the church of our Lord is singled out to be smashed by the evil. And of course it is, because that's what Satan's goal is. It was Satan's goal in Habakkuk's time. It's Satan's goal today. It's always going to be the case that the remnant believers in our world are singled out for persecution and injustice. Now let's observe the obvious here in verses 2 through 4. These words that are used here are words of a prayer. He uses phrases like, how long? Why? And he's not engaged in some philosophical exercise about evil and how we confront it. He's concerned about the very real injustice and violence that's occurring. And he is perplexed, perplexed by God's seeming inaction. And what we can learn here is prayer is not a place to escape your perplexity, but it's a place to express it. How long, God, will you let this evil go on? And why are you not doing something? And prayer may not always lead to greater peace. I know we sing the hymn, what a friend we have in Jesus. And it says, oh, what peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we often bear. And you know, that's all true. And I sing it because it's true. But sometimes it is not always the case that prayer always leads to greater peace. And sometimes, like Habakkuk, it leaves you more disturbed than when you first began. Not just with the issues of the day, but with the way you think that God is handling it. The silence of God in human violence. Next, we see the sovereignty of God in human arrogance. The sovereignty of God in human arrogance. There's a matter of surprise here, and we're going to get to it in just a moment, in this, especially in 5 and 6, where he says that, look among the nations and see, wonder, and be astounded, for I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe if told. For behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation. Now, you could be misled here. If you just look at the English translation and you see the word you. Now, and this is a problem with the English language, but we in the South have solved this problem because instead of using you, when we're talking about the plural second person here, we'd say just y'all. Y'all. Well, that's what's going on here. He is saying y'all. He's not talking to Habakkuk here. You might think that he's talking to Habakkuk solely in the response that God makes here, but he's talking about all of Israel. And so he's saying, y'all, so read it as y'all. So in verse 5, it says, look among the nations and be wondered, for I'm doing a work in your days that y'all would not believe if told. We're talking about these people's lifetime here. And we're talking about all the people of Judah. And you're not going to believe, they do not believe what's being told to them. And we'll get to what's being told to them in just a moment here. But in Acts, the 13th chapter, Paul references this passage, talking about unbelief of the Jews to the Jews of the present day. You won't believe what God's going to do. So let's look at this example of sovereignty of God and human arrogance. Let's remember that Habakkuk here is questioning whether God sees what is happening and why he's not doing anything about it. But God says, you think I haven't noticed, you don't think I'm doing anything, but I'm getting ready to do a work that you won't believe. It's going to astound you, it's going to astonish you, it's going to be so unbelievable that you're not going to believe it. And what is that that I'm going to do? I'm going to raise up the Chaldeans. And they're going to go, the Chaldeans? Aren't they oppressed by the Assyrians? Like all of us are? And you're going to raise them up? Now, as I said, this is all going to happen here very soon. We talked about at the beginning, this is happening in the latter part of the 7th century. And not too long from here, the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, those guys, they're going to rise up and they're going to become powerful. It would be a bit like me telling you today that Bolivia in 15 years is going to become the most powerful nation in the world. And you're going to go, Bolivia? Really? That's not possible. God says, be astounded. I am raising up the Chaldeans of all people. And in 612, the Babylonians defeat the Assyrians at Nineveh. Just a few decades after, probably, this is being said. Maybe even shorter. And in 605, they defeat the Egyptians and they become the dominant power. They are the world power and they're rolling into Judah. And notice here, God doesn't say, this is going to be just a small little cleanup job of all the evildoers, and they're going to leave you alone. No, no, no. They're coming in, and they're going to smash you, utterly destroy you. They're going to take you away. And not only that, these people, if you listen to them, let's look at what it says about them. What does it say about the Chaldeans? They are a bitter and hasty nation. They seize dwellings not their own, dreaded and fearsome, all come for violence. They gather captives like sand. At kings they scoff, at rulers they laugh. They laugh at every fortress. They sweep by like the wind and go on, guilty men whose own might is their God. And you can hear just for a moment, because you would probably be saying to yourself, if you're Habakkuk, whoa, whoa, wait. Now, hold on here. The Babylonians? They're worse than us. These Chaldeans are terrible people. You even said it yourself. Why are they going to come in and destroy us, your covenant people? But it seems sometimes that we write a script for God to follow when we pray to Him in our prayers about the things that we would like, our petitions, like Habakkuk did, and we expect God to follow the script, and there's only one way that God can answer, right? Only one way. Well, maybe not. Maybe sometimes God's answers are more perplexing than His apparent failure to act. And they certainly were. And we're not going to read it to Habakkuk because he is concerned. God doesn't say, see, I am raising up an army of believers to overthrow the wicked. No, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that arrogant, evil, oppressive, godless nation, to utterly crush you. And they will be the instruments of my judgment against my people. The sovereignty of God and human arrogance. Finally, we see the last kind of quandary that I want to talk about this morning. The worship of God and human hope. Now, Habakkuk starts his response here to God. We don't read, I didn't ask Brandon to read the rest of the chapter. We don't have time to discuss it. And if you read it, Habakkuk's very concerned about what God has just told him. I think we would be too if we were in Habakkuk's shoes. But he starts his response to God. And with all of this happening, he takes a break, so to speak, and he worships God, because these are the words of worship in verse 12. And he says in the ESV, it reads, "Are you not from everlasting?" Now, it can also be translated there, "Are you not from ancient times?" In Micah, the 7th chapter, Micah uses the phrase in the ESV, "days of old." If you look in Micah, the 7th chapter, in verses 14 and 15 and in verse 20 as well, Micah says this. This is the ESV, and I'll get to this in just a moment. "Shepherd your people with your staff, the flock of your inheritance who dwell alone in a forest in the midst of a garden land. Let them graze in Bashan and Gilead as in the days of old, as in the days when you came out of the land of Egypt. I will show them marvelous things." And in verse 20, "You will show faithfulness to Jacob and steadfast love to Abraham as you have sworn to our fathers from the days of old." This is translated here alternately, ancient times. Why is he making this reference here? He's making this reference here because this is a phrase to indicate God's role in saving his people from oppression whenever that time may be. And he's making an appeal to this historical God who saves his people, and he's saying to God, "I know you've done it in the past, and I know you're going to do it now." But see, God is not just a historical God as far as Habakkuk is concerned. It's not just this academic, historical God. He calls him, "O Lord, my God, my Holy One." It is a personal God. And anyone that has the living God as their historical God also has him as their personal God. You cannot separate the two. And not only is he a personal God, but he is a revealing God. "O Lord, you have ordained them as judgment." Whatever perplexity that he has, he understands God is revealing his will. And he's not just a historical or a personal or revealing God. He's also an anchoring God, because he calls them, "O God, O Rock." We call God an anchor that we can stay steadfast in. And he recognizes that no matter the coming storm, God will be there for them. So he's a historical God. He's a personal God. He's a revealing God, and he's an anchoring God. He is worshiping. These are the words of worship. And notice this one line in the middle here. "We shall not die." Who's the "we" here? Who is he talking about? No, he's talking about himself and all those remnant believers in Judah. And what does that phrase mean? And that even though God is sending the Babylonians to wipe them all out and to deal with the evilness in Judah that is perplexing and vexing Habakkuk, God will preserve his true believers because of who he is. How that happens, don't know. Can't tell you. Habakkuk can't tell you how that's going to happen. It's going to happen. But Habakkuk takes assurance from that. And so Habakkuk wraps all of his concerns here in worship and puts them in that context. Isn't that sort of like what Asaph did in Psalm 73? You remember what was going on there in Psalm 73? That Asaph, the issue that he had there, he had the issue of the problem of the prosperity of the wicked. And God told him, don't get worked up over that, Asaph. Don't get worked up over it. But of course, Asaph got worked up over it. And he got so worked up over it that he came to despair over a bunch of verses in Psalm 73, and it just drove him up a wall. He couldn't take it. And he almost left his faith because of it. But notice what he said there in verses 16 and 17 of Psalm 73. But when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task until I went into the sanctuary of God. Then I discerned their end. Not that worship is an escape from your problems, because they're always waiting for us when we're done worshiping. But you see where he got his real insight into his problems? It wasn't in some philosophical conversation outside of worship. It was while he was worshiping in adoration and bowing before God, a God that he still didn't fully understand, both Asaph and Habakkuk. And so it should be us too. And how many times in our prayers do we give God the adoration he deserves? That we give this laundry list of things that we want God to do. God, do this, do this, do this. We have this problem and that problem. But when do we stop to give God the praise and the honor and the adoration? And it's not to say that we don't give him our problems. We are told to make our request known to God, but we need to give him the adoration he deserves. And I will say, to the credit of many here, they do that in their prayers. So now we're calling this the worship of God in human hope. And we have that phrase here, we will not die. Human hope. One way or another, the prophet knows the people of God are going to be preserved. It's meant in the context as a corporate preservation, but we can take it today also in a very personal way. In Luke, the 21st chapter, Jesus makes this paradox. Luke 21 and verses 16 and 18, he says, you will be delivered up even by parents and brothers and relatives and friends, and some of you they will put to death. Verse 18, but not a hair of your head will perish. Sounds like a contradiction to me, because he's saying some of you are going to be put to death, but none of you, not a hair on your head will perish. How can that be? Maybe it's because God's in, Jesus is in the resurrection business, and it doesn't matter if we do die on this earth, we shall live. Do we believe that? Habakkuk did. We will not die. The worship of God in human hope. So we return to the main point of this passage. It is true that faith often finds itself perplexed to God and sometimes finds God's answers lead to even more problems for faith. However, hopefully what we have heard this morning from Habakkuk chapter 1 should allow us in the midst of our own world of corruption, this perverted generation that has nothing to do with God, to be able to say that God is our Holy One, our rock, and we will not die. Jesus said, come unto me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest from this world that is passing away, the rest in the world that is to come. That's our invitation to you this morning if you have not yet put on God as we stand and as we sing. Oh, that-